This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection. We have a really fun show for you today. I have a very sexy pilot with me here today, Michael Schneider, and he is one of the founders of Pilots to the Rescue. And they go and they find animals, I guess it just dogs or other animals too, that you go and rescue and bring to places they need to be? Or
yeah, dogs and cats are our bread and butter. We've also done wolves and sea turtles and foxes and hens.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome. So how did you get started? What was your story?
I started Pilots to Rescue back in 2015 to combine my love of aviation and rescuing animals. And the animal part came at a very young age. I always had an affinity towards any type of animal. My parents, they would take me to the local SPCA and we'd pick out a dog or a cat. And I didn't even know till later in life that you could purchase animals. I just thought that's how you would have a pet. You would rescue it. So I got used to at a very young age interacting with animals. And to my parents' dismay, I also was the neighborhood kid who picked up the injured bird and nursed it back to health. I also had hamsters and gerbils and hermit crabs and mice, all kinds of pets. Always was interested in having animals and had a special connection with them. I even had a pet sitting company where I would go to the local neighbors and make sure the cats and dogs have fresh food and water. I would walk them. I'd use the fenced-in pen that my neighbor had that they weren't using. So I was very entrepreneurial at a young age as well. And then the aviation part came much later in life. I'm 48 now. I've been flying for about a little over a decade. And at the time I was living in Cincinnati, and a woman that I was dating asked if I wanted to go skydiving for my birthday.
Yeah.
So that was my first introduction into general aviation. And I just became very intrigued with the instrumentation and the single pilot and sitting on the floor of a plane with feeling all the vibrations. You know, these things you don't really get a sense of when you're flying in a big commercial jet. So that was very eye-opening and intriguing. And after about three jumps, I started asking questions of the pilot, and he recommended I take a discovery flight, which I did. A discovery flight is a one-hour flight at your local airport with an instructor, and you get a chance to feel what it's like to do to do maneuvers. You don't do the takeoff and landings. You do maneuvers. And I signed up for lessons instantly. And the rest was history. And then when I moved back to New York, I heard about groups helping out sick people that were going for treatment far away because they were getting it pro bono or having some kind of specialist. And I also heard about groups that were transporting animals that were at risk of being euthanized. Yes. Being the entrepreneur that I am, I wanted to start my own charity. Also, another great way to raise money to acquire a larger aircraft, which are usually not available to people that are renting. So that's really how I started Pilots to Rescue. Love of aviation, love of animals, and combining these two passions. It's very rewarding work.
Well, it's so wonderful because we know some shelters are just completely overwhelmed. And sometimes they're in areas where people only want big dogs or they only want small dogs or whatever. And then there are people in other parts of the country that want the opposite of what they're or the same what they're filled with, and the ability to move animals from one place to another. So tell me a little bit about how you work with the different rescues.
We have rescues that I've been working with nearly a decade. This is our 10th year anniversary. We started in 2015. These are groups that we've worked with since day one. We fly out of New Jersey and we're almost always going down south. So we're largely going to the Carolinas, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Kentucky, those areas. We do some rescue from Texas and Florida, but there's often some driving involved that they come and meet us, like in South Carolina or Georgia. And then we entertain new relationships all the time. People call us and email us, and you know, they say they have some animals they need to move, and they have relationships up in the Northeast. So we entertain those. And lately, we've been working with larger organizations because we did acquire a larger aircraft. So we've been working quite a bit with Humane Society of the United States, as well as Bissell Pet Foundation. And we love working with those groups because they have tremendous resources at their disposal, and it makes our job easier. We can focus on the transport. They focus on communications and PR, and it's just, it's a well-oiled machine. Nothing against the smaller rescues. They're also tremendous, but we're a little bit more hands-on with the smaller rescues. We get involved in the whole process. So it's a little bit more taxing on our resources, but we love working with all the groups. All the groups we work with are on our website, pilotstotherescue.org. And So
how many animals can fly at one time?
So the cabin, we could fit anywhere, I would say from 20 to 100 owls.
Wow, that's huge. Yeah.
It's always the size of the crate that's the limiting factor. So when we get a dog that's over 80 pounds, we often tether them just because the crate would be humongous. But safety is number one, of course, not just for the pilots, but also the animals. So when we tether animals in the back, we make sure we have someone in the back, because the people that are flying the plane in the front, it's very difficult for them, obviously, to deal with an animal in the back that's not in a crate. If they're puppies or cats, we can do 100 of them. I mean, they don't take up much room at all. But generally, we're transporting, I would say, 30 to 50 animal range in this plane.
Mm-hmm. And how do the animals handle it? How do they manage it? How do they get water? Do they eat? Are they pottying in their crib? What's the story? Give me the lowdown.
Sure. Well, the loading of the animals is the most stressful part, because they have most likely never been on an aircraft before. They're coming from most likely a precarious situation, whether it be hoarding, abuse, neglect. So they're already pretty timid. But once we start up the engine, the noise and the vibration tends to make them a little sleepy. And it's an unpressurized aircraft. So 8,000 feet is our ceiling. We can't go any higher than 8,000 feet because they can become hypoxic. There's less oxygen at that level. Just a little tidbit without geeking out about too much about aviation. In a commercial plane that you fly at, they're most likely pressurized at 8,000 feet also. So that's why people get a little tired when they travel. There's a little less oxygen. So they're pretty good passengers, or passengers, as we call them. And we pretty much tell them not to feed or drink them too much, because a lot of times you'll find that they will go to the bathroom, and we have to deal with those unpleasant smells. So we all know water is the most important. I think, like, for example, a human can go 3 weeks without food, but you can only go like 3 days without water. I don't know what it is for animals, but most important thing is that they have water. But once we start up, they go to sleep. Once in a while, you'll get a yappy one. Yeah, the small dogs are usually yappy, like the little chihuahuas and stuff like that. They tend to bark the most.
Okay.
So it's funny, because we'll be flying along 2 hours into the flight, everything's really quiet, and all of a sudden they just start to chime in for whatever reason, you know. So it's always fun. And then you get the wafts of smells, you know, if they do go to the bathroom.
Right. And do you do any sedation, or they're like trazodone or anything like that? Or they're
No. Okay. We generally don't transport any flight risks. I've seen people pull out calming treats before. So I'm not sure what they're doing before. I mean, if they're a flight risk, maybe they are sedating them, but I don't believe it to be anything, you know, prescription-wise.
Right.
So they have to be fit to travel. We've had a couple animals that we've refused to travel because they became aggressive in nature as we were loading them, and we just refused to take them because we can't run that risk. We haven't had one animal perish in transport, so we hope to keep it that way.
That's good, yeah. And is there someone in the back with them when you're flying generally, or not?
Generally, I would say yes in this larger aircraft that we have now. Especially if we're tethering any animals. But we generally run a minimum of 2-person crew, typically a pilot and a co-pilot. But we often take influencers and content creators with us as well. And they're obviously very friendly with animals. So they do a great job in the back.
Okay, that's good. Well, we have some of those. We'll let you know. Now, do you have standard routes that you always do? Or do you sometimes, like, can somebody call you and say, I have something? Or is it only the organizations that call you?
We have pretty known routing, if you will, and we've been doing a lot of combining lately because not everybody can handle 30 to 50 animals at one time. Even the cases, as I mentioned before, like Bissell Pet Foundation or Humane Society, there's multiple agencies on the recipient end that pick up the animals, usually not one recipient shelter or foster. But we're almost, North Carolina is the number one state we go to. And then, you know, it's a smattering of South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky. We did just do an epic flight of 33 endangered sea turtles. I know you're going to ask me about stories. And we made stops in Jekyll Island, Georgia, two stops in Florida. Then we went to Louisiana and brought back 30, I think over 30 dogs. Well, so that was a very rewarding trip because it's such an efficient use of an aircraft. Aviation's just silly expensive. It's crazy how expensive it is.
Yeah.
And when we can fill the cabin round trip like that, it makes us feel really good because we make good use of that resource.
Sure, sure. Well, speaking of stories, what are some of your favorite stories that really touched your heart? I mean, I know they're all good, but what stands out?
Well, one that stand out recently was a dog. Its name was Dalton. They changed it to Finn. But Dalton, the reason why it stood out to me is because I have a black shepherd rescue myself, and Dalton looks exactly like my rescue pup. The difference is Dalton's missing an ear. So when I saw a picture of Dalton, I was like, how did this dog come to miss an ear? And we came to find out it was a bait dog. I don't know if you know about bait dogs and dog fighting. So that really... my dog is kind of skittish. We suspected some abuse and neglect. So when I saw that picture of Dalton, it just really hit me. And it came from Miami and it was adopted. So that's a great thing. It had bite marks all over its body. It was missing its tail also. And now it's been adopted by a loving home. So the abused dogs that are missing like limbs and stuff like that always strike me, because not just by the fact that they act as if nothing has happened, they're still the same loving, unconditional love type animals, but the fact that people are willing to take these animals into their home, it just shows that there's still faith in humanity, that there's still good people out there that want to give back. So that's why I love them. I mean, everybody wants to adopt a puppy or a kitten, but what about all these other animals that are left for dead, you know?
Exactly.
So,
and especially the ones without a tail, it's hard for them to talk to other dogs because the tail is such a significant communication tool, you know? So when a dog is missing ears or tails, they're really hampered in how well they can signal to other dogs, and it requires the graciousness of the other dog meeting this one to understand intention and motivation. So yeah, it's very challenging. It's wonderful when people adopt. And do you also get yourself situations where there have been natural disasters and you have a lot of dogs that have to move out of these environments? Is that something you've also done?
Oh yeah, we did a lot of work around Helene and Milton. We've been down to Asheville several times to get animals out of that situation. That work, we just finished doing some flights with them towards the end of last year with Bissell Pet Foundation. So disaster response is an area that we're looking to do more in, because roads are impassable right after disasters, and the airports are some of the first facilities to open up. And it's also very rewarding to bring supplies in, not just for our furry friends, but humans as well, whether it be toilet paper, paper towels, potable, you know, like bottled water, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's extremely rewarding work. And we feel like we're making a tremendous difference doing that kind of stuff. I also love the endangered species work that we do. We do Mexican gray wolves and red wolves with the Wolf Conservation Center. And the reason why that's so rewarding is because we're single-handedly making a difference in the proliferation of that species.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a critically endangered species like the wolf, and if it ends up becoming eradicated, it means that another species will become invasive. Right. We're, that's what people don't realize. We're all connected. You know, someone might say like, well, who cares if we lose the wolf? Well, where would we be? Where would the domesticated dog be without the wolf? You know,
right.
You have to think about the, how evolution happens, how we're all connected, how it's of vital importance to preserve these species.
Yeah, it's very important. We're all connected. Well, we're going to take a short little break. And when we come back, I want to hear one of your favorite stories about a rescue. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection. I'm Jeannie Joseph, and I'm speaking with Michael Schneider, and he is one of the founders of Pilots to the Rescue. And they find dogs that are in dire straits that need to get to better situations so they can find happy and healthy homes. So, yeah, I know I would imagine that it doesn't always go as you had planned. I know you had a story about a cat that had a little bit of an adventuresome nature. What happened with that cat?
Earlier on, In Pilots to Rescue, we were experimenting with different types of crates, and we had in our mind that we would go with some of these cat crates that had zippers where you could unzip them rather than like a locking door.
Okay.
And we were flying along, and sure enough, one of the cats got out, a bit of escape artist, and climbed underneath the pilot seat up into the flight deck, and it just wanted to hang out there. It would crawl up on the dash, and we were flying along with a cat in the dash. And, you know, so that was a really funny story with the cats. They're very intuitive. They sometimes love to be in small, confined spaces, and other times they want to see what's going on. So it was a little startling to,
sure,
you know, at first. But I mean, it took us a minute to figure out what happened. We were thinking, oh, did we forget to put one of the cats in the crates? You know, so obviously, that crate did not work out.
Right. Yeah. Well, I would imagine you always have to be prepared for the unexpected when you're dealing with animals and with flight.
This is true.
Yeah. And I know it's not just dogs and cats that you've rescued. And you mentioned the wolves, which is so important. I'm so glad you're doing that. You mentioned sea turtles. Tell us about that, the experience with the sea turtles. How do you, they have to be in water, or what's the story with that?
We transport sea turtles in banana boxes. They're literally like the Chiquita banana boxes, like the big ones that the supermarkets get. They do need to be temperature controlled climate. So we crank up the heat. I think they like 78 degrees. And what happens up here in the Northeast, that's these endangered sea turtles, and these particular turtles were called Kemp Ridleys. And some of them get quite big, like 60 pounds. They're endangered sea turtles, and they overstay their welcome in the cold Northeast New England waters. So they get their equivalent of hypothermia. It's called cold stunned. So they get hypothermic and they have to be nursed back to health. And then we transport them to warmer waters. So we worked with the NOAA fisheries, NOAA being the government organization, and the New England Aquarium. And the New England Aquarium was nice enough to keep the turtles until they got healthy enough to travel. And then we picked them up in Norwood, Massachusetts, and we flew to Jekyll Island, Georgia, and two stops in Florida, or Orlando, and I think Palm Beach. The ones in Orlando went to SeaWorld. And then, so these turtles now, escaped a certain death, and we were able to make that happen. It's so important with these endangered turtles. to be able to get them out of the frigid ocean temperatures. Also had the opportunity of several years back to release some of these myself in the beaches of North Carolina. It's an amazing experience to see how they orient themselves. Some of them get a little confused when you take them out of the banana boxes and they do circles. Others make a dash for the water. It's pretty cool. It's amazing to watch.
It's beautiful, yeah, that instinct to go to where they're supposed to be, and that just that ability to say, okay, that was the past, this is the present, here I go.
That's right.
It's really a good lesson for us humans. I mean, I think I know you've seen a lot of stories like that. Animals have been through terrible situations and they just want to be here now and live life and be full. And it's beautiful that their spirits are not completely smashed, even if body parts have been smashed. That's really lovely.
That's right.
I know. Yeah. I know you have had, you had a cat named Oreo that had a damaged leg. What was Oreo's story?
Yeah, Oreo is really, it was really unfortunate situation. Such a sweet kitten that we rescued back in November, taken in by St. Francis. And the cat was found by a staffer dragging its leg up the stairs of a country store in a rural Georgetown County in South Carolina. And someone from St. Francis spotted the cat and brought him into the shelter for the care. And it turned out the leg was completely shattered and couldn't be repaired. And it would need a total amputation. And they had no money left in their medical budget. And that's one of the biggest problems today is veterinarian care has become so expensive. So thankfully, a great rescue in New Jersey, we stepped up and was able to get the leg amputated quickly. And Oreo was adopted by a loving family. And it last time I checked, it didn't even, the cat didn't even seem to care that it was missing a leg.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so wonderful.
So, yeah.
So it's just so great when people do step up, as you said, to take those animals that maybe not everybody wants. Everybody wants a cute little puppy or a cute little kitten. And we've got all these animals that are really in need of help. And it's so great that if they're not in an area where they can find that family, that you provide that service, that you bring them to a place where there is a family waiting and ready to love and help that animal heal.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And a lot of the animals that are unwanted or unadoptable are the ones that often get euthanized. And those, you know, this Oreo or the one I talked about before that reminded me of my own dog, Finn is the name now. Those are oftentimes the ones that are getting euthanized. So those stories really stand out because they're voiceless. You know, nobody can speak for them. It's not their fault. You know, it's really not their fault, the predicaments that they get into.
So what is your hope for the world in the future? What would you like to see?
I would like Pilots to Rescue to have a fleet of aircraft and ground vehicles. We do a lot of ground transport too. We don't talk about it as much because obviously it doesn't get as much attention, but ground transport is a very viable way to transport animals efficiently and economically. So I would love to have a fleet of aircraft and vehicles across the country that we could offer up to partners free of charge to help their transport needs. Because what I'm finding is a lot of groups are paying. They have a budget for transporting animals, which is really a shame. You know, it's when you're talking about chartering aircraft to transport animals, you're talking oftentimes 5-6 figures. I mean, it's huge sums of money. So, and there are great use cases for aviation. Not all the time, as I said, ground transport's always going to be cheapest, but like after a disaster, for example, it's all hands on deck. It's get as many animals out as you can. So that's a great use case of aviation. But it pains me that these groups are spending so much money lining the pockets of some for-profit charter aviation organization. I would much prefer that we can provide that service for them. You know, with open arms. So, I mean, we could do it with as little as 5 aircraft across the country. It is so crazy expensive to buy. They're like $2-3 million used that it's going to take us a while before we could build it out. We're about halfway there to our second one, which we would put down south. So then we could cover basically Texas all the way east. So that's my hopes in the future, and also spreading more awareness. We do a lot of work about creating content, because even if we had a fleet of jumbo jets, we couldn't rescue enough animals. They're still euthanizing nearly 1 million animals in this country every year. Mm-hmm. But we get a lot of attention through the press and great people like such as yourself covering our story because it's interesting. It's a novel concept. And then we have this amazing platform to talk about this problem that we still have. And maybe that little transformational shift in people's thinking after they hear about our story, oh, you know, maybe instead of buying this dog, I should go to my local rescue and adopt one, for example. And so it's about creating awareness. That's how you're going to really move the needle. We can't transport enough animals to make a huge dent in that situation, but all this content that we create, all this awareness, all this news, that's how we're really going to change people's thinking.
Yeah. And the notion of really organized ground transport. I know in some areas there are, you know, where three different drivers will get a dog across the country or something like this. But we need a much more methodical method, like it sounds like you guys are doing. So that's really wonderful. How can people get involved? How can they help you? What do you need?
Yeah. So we do have a volunteer intake form on our website at pilotstotherescue.org. But the best way to get involved is if you have a large vehicle and you're willing to drive many, many hours, you can volunteer time for many organizations that do transport, and shelter to shelter transport is happening every day. So that's really helpful. Also going to your local shelter and offering up your help with even giving temporary love to these animals. You may not be able to adopt for whatever reason, financial or otherwise, but you can sort of check out a dog for the day. You could foster an animal. These are very critical services that these shelters need, and the animals need it too. They need your love, even if it's temporary. So really important. Of course, we always need donations. It's never enough money, but there are ways where I think it would benefit the volunteer more to get roll up their sleeves and get involved, just because the feeling that you get when you give back is tremendous. It fills you up inside. It gives you that warmth, that love, that sense of purpose. That's the big thing. I mean, this was only my full-time job since 2021. I'm a COVID success story with my other business failing. And I can tell you this work is way more rewarding. It's better than buying a new car or a new pair of shoes. Those moments are very fleeting. But when you actually roll up your sleeves and get involved with something that you're passionate about, the feeling is multiplied and it's lasting.
Yeah. Well, I'm a shelter volunteer, and there's one program here in Tucson. We can take the dogs out of the shelter for the afternoon, and they just come to this one place called Tucson Rescue Me Now, and they get love and healing. And of course, in the human-animal connection, we have some healing techniques that we do with animals. Some involve touch, some don't involve touch, but we give them a dose of healing. They get a nap. They get to lay on a couch, sit with a person, you know, have some good treats. And unfortunately, they do have to go back to the shelter, but we know that they're going back in just a little bit better shape than they came in. So there's a lot of ways that people can get involved, whether for a couple of hours or a couple of days or whatever you have to help. And it's so great, Michael, the work that you're doing. And we're so glad to have you on our show. And I know some of our social media would love to come and take a ride with you sometime, if that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to sign up right up on the website.
All right. That's excellent. All right. Well, any last words before we let you go?
We always like to say adopt, don't shop.
Adopt, don't shop. There you go. Well, Michael Schneider from Pilots to the Rescue, thank you for the wonderful work that you're doing with all the different species. And every little bit counts. Every life saved matters.
Thank you for having me on the show, Jeannie.
Thank you. See you again soon.
See you.
Well, thank you for being a part of the Human-Animal Connection. We'll see you and hear you or hear us in the next episode. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human-Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human-Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.